on the campus, and he was asking her to come over to him, and he was calling her out of her name, and all at once he said to her, "B, you think you're cute, you hear me calling?" And she went sashaying over there, and I had to dip in. And I had to tell her, "You ought to be ashamed of yourself. And boy, you ought to be ashamed of yourself." But that got to be a widespread kind of situation, you see. So we've found the enemy, and so often the enemy is us, you see. We're standing in the way. No wonder some whites are afraid. Jesse said, and all of us said, "Meet a black coming with his breeches down below his posterior end, with a cap, all kinds of baggy t-shirts and this and that." You don't know what this thug, hoodlum-like person would be capable of doing. But that's what we got. And we got our young ladies buying into this kind of negative, devastating lifestyle. So, King would not be pleased with that at all, you see. I think in many instances we're standing in our own self-way.
What do you think could have been done about increasing poverty and crime, like back in the 70s or 80s?
Could have been done about decreasing it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, SCLC under King had a poverty program, and the tent city in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't too long after that before he was killed in Memphis. But it was going to be a crusade against poverty, not just for blacks, but for whites too, you see. And of course, I'm sure the powers that be got the message, and that would have been a revolution,
mm-hmm.
See. So we are aware that poverty is one of the chief enemies. Katrina and Rita revealed that when they went through New Orleans. The cover was pulled off. That kind of situation. Now, what are we going to do about it? Unfortunately, we have a president who believes in taking from the poor, giving it to the rich, and aiding and abetting oil companies that are making $1 billion worth of profit, and never said anything to seek to discourage that. And I guess because his family's in the oil business, Cheney's in the oil business, and a lot of his other people in the oil business. And I do believe that somehow they have sought to manipulate the situation, being over in Iraq with the OPEC people over there, to cause the barrels of oil to go up, because the United States, you'd have a lot of influence over there, and they're over there. And of course, I just think it's that policy. So the pharmaceuticals, you can't buy medicine. They're cutting your throat. Other kinds of necessary services that's being rendered, they got a stranglehold on this administration is doing absolutely nothing, you see. So we're going to have a real poverty program, you see. So many people don't have insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Millions of people don't have insurance, you see. We have this problem with illegal aliens. And of course, when they get here, they get various services from various communities. Maybe there's a limit to it, and the schools and all that. And that's a taxing on the resources which are here. So we need a poverty program. And that's very important, and that's what is absolutely necessary, not that it's going to solve all the problems, but it will go a good ways, in I think, in solving some of the problems.
Have you seen a sharp increase in poverty in your own neighborhood?
Well, I guess I can say yes and no. And I say yes and no for this reason. I think that poverty, and I read a book when I was in school, and it was How the Other Half Live, I believe was the name of it. Poverty also is a state of mind. And some people are very poor because they take their resources and buy things which they don't necessarily need, which are not necessities. The old saying, so many people buy what they want and beg for what they need. I see some of that still persisting, and I see so many blacks in the poverty because they use their money for drugs and other kinds of things, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And they kill you just for a little drug money and all of that. And they impoverish themselves, impoverish their families in that respect. So I say yes and no.
No, it's not, at least in some cases, it's not so much a matter of not having the resources.
Not having enough resources that you, and of course the poverty level, you know, when you look at where the income is, let me take this pill,
okay,
where the poverty level is, you see, I'm with single mothers. Yes. Single mothers. They usually don't make enough money to get beyond the poverty level. So, poverty in this country has increased. And I say yes and no, I would have to say to some extent it has increased. And you said in my community, I live in a sort of a upbeat community.
Mm-hmm.
And having worked hard and got to the point where I could move my family to an area called Forestdale, you see,
mm-hmm,
where the people have good houses and things of that kind, you see. But in so many other communities, poverty has increased. It has increased in this country, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to answer yes to that, too. And I said no because of some of the practices that we see prevailing. So let me take this for you.
Okay.
My doctor gave me 6 months and no more than 9 months to live.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still here.
30 years ago.
Carrying on. He marvels every time he take a PET scan. He doesn't understand what's going on.
That's wonderful.
Yes. Okay.
We talked a little bit about how the community was involved when Mayor Arrington got elected, but how has community participation changed since then?
Well, we still have community involvement, and if you mean so far as civil rights is concerned, or whether you mean involvement in city activities, what do you mean?
Is there a big difference between the two?
Yes, there's a great big difference between the two. We have blacks holding outstanding positions of public service in the city of Birmingham. Mm-hmm. And the communities are organized, and there are various activities in the community which are supported by city government, and they seek to better their communities. They organize, their presidents and this and that and other. In fact, it's a model that I think some other cities have looked at. So, trying to get things done in their community, roads, housing, this, that, and the other. You got quite a bit of involvement when it comes to things of that kind. But I would say that involvement in the civil rights struggle has somewhat waned, because so many blacks feel that we have arrived. Mm-hmm. And I guess you know the civil rights movement has been roundly criticized, and even by some black reporters who ought to know better, says that there's no need for us now. And how they can say that when it is a known fact that racism is institutionalized in the American society. Every institution in this society, whether it is politics, whether it is the economic structure, whether it is education, whether it is religion, it is true that even now, in 2006, the most segregated hour in America is the Sunday hour, mm-hmm. you see. And so as long as you're going to have racism, you're going to need a civil rights organization. I know that there are those who say that the civil rights organization ought to be about dealing with AIDS, ought to be about dealing with drugs, and ought to be about dealing with this, that, and the other. Yes, there are some implications that we see there, but the civil rights organization main work is to monitor the activities of our country to be sure that African Americans are treated in an equitable, fair manner. That does not always happen. The Lady Justice is not completely blind, you know that, mm-hmm. by the prison bureaucracy, business, you see. And it's no secret, it's no accident that you have more black folk incarcerated. Not that black don't commit crime, but you know the system, what the system does, you know, and that sort of thing. Even when it comes to drugs. If you got a certain amount of one drug and you got a small amount of another drug,
the smaller amount can send you to prison.
That's right. And the larger amount of the other drug get you wrapped on the knuckles. Quite, you see. So, I hope I answered your question. If I didn't, you asked involvement. What I'm talking about, yes. The NAACP's had its problem. SCLC's had its problem. Mm-hmm. And even the Kings have been criticized. you see. And we have people who don't even know what the SAIC is about until they get in trouble. And then they call me, is this the SCCC? You know, don't even know the name. Don't even know the name. They've gotten in trouble, and they want me to jump up and run and see about them. And if you don't do it, then they will be very critical of you.
What kind of help do they usually
want?
That's
right. Huh?
What kind of help do they usually want?
On the job.
Oh, okay.
And sometimes it's their own fault. They haven't been the kind of worker they should have been, you see, and people just get tired of it. And, they used to didn't do this, you know, I said they let you by, but you knew that wasn't right. And they want us to jump on the folk without investigating that word, but I've been out on that limb before. I learned not to get out on that limb, because when you really go to the business and corporation and get the other side, and they come up with records, you see, then these people are really on pleading terms of mercy, you see. They have a right to dismiss them. But I know a lot of discrimination is going on still with that. And the federal government agency is underfunded, and it is not working well, and sometimes they go to that agency which is supposed to deal with that, and they give them 90 days to sue and this sort of thing. When things go badly for them, they come to us. You see, the strategy is already set, and so often there's little or nothing that we can do. Some of them think we can walk on water. You see, even when a judge is rude, and he ruled unfair, then they come to us, try to get the ruling changed, and all of that, you see. But there's not as much involvement of the rank and file masses. We have marches now when it's necessary, demonstrations now, and some people ought to be a part of it. They are sitting on the porch or sitting on the sideline, standing on the sideline, just watching when they ought to be involved, you see. I think that's around the country, you see, with the civil rights. So, no, that's not the same kind of involvement. Our people think they have it made. They have jobs. They don't know how they got them. They think they got there on their own abilities, when we had to assail the doors until they opened to bring blacks in. And some of them thumbed their nose at the civil rights movement. Some black politicians do the same thing. There are some black politicians out of Birmingham. We've never been able to get to help the civil rights struggle. They have good resources and this and that, but they are tied up with other interests, and some of the interests are against us, and they don't want to be seen embracing us, you see. So some black elected officials and they are some of our worst enemies. I hate to say that, but that is true. And I really hate to say this, that the first black police chief was a black man. We applauded him because we wanted him. But I've always had an image of dealing with police brutality and the unnecessary use by police of deadly force. Mm-hmm. Whenever a Negro was killed and shot and this sort of thing, we used to investigate. And sometimes we find that the police did not need to use deadly force. And we deal with that, you see. They don't want us to do that, you see. And so I've got an image in dealing with some of these trigger-happy policemen. They call me Trigger-Happy Woods, you see, in the newspaper, and that sort of thing. And The first black police chief we got. A policeman killed a citizen over in the Norwood area. He was in a scuffle. He was in a scuffle with this citizen who was probably doing something wrong. And this Negro got the best of him in the scuffle and threw him down on the ground and started running. And of course he told him to stop. Yeah. But he refused to stop. So what does he do? Shoot him in the back.
Mm-hmm.
And then get over him and shoot him while he's on the ground.
Mm.
You're not supposed to shoot a fleeing felon unless he's posing a danger to you. He knocked him down, he knocked the policeman down, he's gone, now he's running. So we were having a press conference about that because we felt that that policeman needed to be dealt with. Do you not know that the black police chief called a press conference to talk about it and had all the media there and whatnot and asked me to leave the press conference?
On what grounds?
Because he was calling and asked me to leave. I don't obey all commands given me, but I knew he made a sad mistake. So I decided to leave. And of course, when I went outside, all the reporters came flocking around me, you see, to get my word, see what I had to say, you see, and this sort of thing. I'm very disappointed because I never had a black, white police chief do that. And of course, the police.
He ruled it justifiable homicide?
No, they finally sent him off.
Oh, okay.
They sent him off. He's out now, but they sent him off. They convicted him. Grand jury convicted him because that was blatant murder, you see. The present black chief we got, she's a fine woman, a Christian woman, that sort of thing. But they wrote her up as a new chief and said she's a tough woman. And we know she's tough because she stood up to Reverend Abraham Woods in criticizing me for dealing with the police shooting. She would say to me, why every time there's a police shooting, you jump up, you want to demonstrate. And every time another Negro kill another Negro, you don't demonstrate on that. She couldn't understand that usually the law would take its course in that. But when it comes to a policeman, he hides behind his badge and hides behind his uniform and sweep his misdeed under the rug. And that's why, you see. But we've come to find out that it's not all the white policemen now, and not all the white folk. It's some black folk too now. Who's not right, you see, and who's not for the right thing.
It sounds like the media gets a kick out of seeing the SCLC get opposition.
Get what?
It sounds like the media likes to see the SCLC get opposition.
Yes, yes, absolutely so. They certainly play that up. You know that we can golf now at some of the places that was closed to us, and that happened in the late 90s when I took a stand against the PGA coming here over at Shoal Creek, which was using taxpayers' money and this and that, and promised to demonstrate and picket. And of course, that Shoal Creek controversy went across the country and across the world.
Yeah, I remember hearing about it.
And I was roundly criticized by some sources, but thank God there were fair-minded corporation leaders who sided with me, and corporations saw that it was going to be a terrible situation, and they started pulling out their support of the PGA here in Shoal Creek. And so as a result, a corporate leader came over to meet with me, and we were able to work out the fact that Shoal Creek would open its doors and take a black, and they did, and that opened the doors around the country. Other golf clubs which were closed to blacks and women opened up, including the Masters, Augusta, where our good friend Tiger Woods was able to come into great prominence. By the way, if you ever see Tiger, tell him to send me a check.
I was thinking that myself.
Yeah. Very sad about it. I hate that his father just passed away.
Yeah, yesterday.
Yeah, some time ago. But, you have another question?
Well, now that you're retired, what do you expect the Birmingham chapter of SCLC to do in the future?
Well, I passed the torch to my brother. He's somewhat younger than I am, but he was old enough to be involved in the struggles of the 50s and the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd been involved ever since with us. Three of his children also went to jail. He went to jail too, on numerous occasions, so the movement is in good hands. I haven't gone anywhere. I will be available to give what assistance I can, but at my age, I'm 77, and my health is not the best, and some of the things that need to be done and some of the places that we need to go and that sort of thing, then I'm not altogether able to do that now, but I'm going to do what I can, you see. So old soldiers never die, they just fade away. So I will still be on the scene as long as God see fit, and give assistance wherever I can. I retired in 2002 from Miles College after 40 years. And after 28 years as the president of the Birmingham chapter of SCLC, just retired from that. By the way, I'm still a national board member of National SCLC. I'm still the vice president of the state SCLC. And I still hold membership in some other community situations. But with my remaining years and most of my energy, I think I need to give it to the church. I've been here 38 years, and probably the Lord may let me stay for a few more, and I can give more time and more energy and commitment to the church. I felt it was time for me to do that,
mm-hmm.
You see. So I'm not going anywhere. Groups still meet here. I'm the chairman for the King Celebration, which we're going to have in next January. We have from 3,000 to 4,000 people at that breakfast, just about half divided, black and white, you see. And we give scholarships to students who write essays on some aspect of King's work, you see. So I'm still going to be giving assistance wherever I am able to do it and where I'm somewhat needed.
Have your church members been really involved in your civil rights activities too?
Some of them have, but not all of them.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I guess they like other folk they get wrapped up and tied up. And frankly, to tell you the truth, I don't think some know the importance of ministering outside of the church walls. I have some who have been perfectly pleased and satisfied with me just staying within the confines of the church ministering.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I couldn't do that. I subscribed, I guess what you call social ministry, on the order of King and others who saw the needs and saw our people oppressed and exploited and mistreated and could not stand idly by and stand behind the pulpit and preach and feel comfortable within the confines of the sanctuary behind the stained glass windows. You see, we believed that not. And I wouldn't have been in the civil rights struggle if I didn't think it was a part of my ministry.
Mm-hmm.
But all of my people, all of the members, have not felt that way. I've had enough. And those who might not have felt that way, they have not bothered me. But I must say that the congregation has supported me. They have not sought to deter me or be an obstacle in any of the activities that I saw fit. So I guess that's some kind of support too. But we've had a few who become a part and parcel and working side by side with us in the struggle.
What kind of support have you had from the white community?
Well, not what I would have so desired. In fact, various white organizations, they feel that if you get together and dialogue and talk about the problem and come together with blacks, that you're making some great progress. I'd long passed that stage. And I got to the place where I stopped being a part of some of these get-togethers. Because when it come to taking forthright action and coming out of the talking stage,
mm-hmm.
I find that they're really not ready to do that, you see. Some time ago I did have a lawyer who joined with me. He's not in Birmingham now. And he was a part of the white organizations, and he said that he was going to share with me and I would never have to address the problems, the civil rights problems in this city without white support. And as long as he was in Birmingham, he did that. When he left, then there were very few people to come forward. There is a white preacher, which is really consistent to work with us. He's a chaplain of our organization, and he's genuine. But getting whites to really move out, they are not ready to be controversial, you see.
Mm-hmm.
They still want to keep their image with those in the white community who might not be ready to move out to bring about some equitable things for black citizens. They're just not going to shake the boat. We got some black leaders too, who are just not going to shake the boat. I call them racial diplomats, you see. because they seek to work, and we got to have somebody who can work with the black white community. But when it come down to controversial things, as marching, standing up, speaking out against inequities, whether it's in the business community, the police, or whatever, they're very silent. They're not going to do that. So we have not had the kind of support from whites in the civil rights struggle as we, as I would like to have seen. Not to say that there are not a few every once in a while who will join with us. And of course, we know when we look at the history of civil rights in this nation that it would have to be a thing of black and white together, because there have been some whites who have given their lives, as you know. Mm-hmm. You know, Viola Lusa, you know, in the Selma, Montgomery situation, you know, Daniels and Reed, Barep, or whatever his name is, those seminarians, and there have been others, and, you know, in Mississippi, the white New Englanders, you know, and this sort of thing. So we've had some whites. In fact, we had some whites in the Congress and in various places that supported us, and I guess it wouldn't be fair to say that none of them have made any contribution, because I don't think if they had not, I think if they had not, then we probably wouldn't be where we are now, whether it's on the Supreme Court or whatnot, you see. So we have to give our white benefactors their dues, because they have been some. You know, even during slavery, there were whites who mm-hmm. sought to strike a blow against that system, you see.
John Brown especially.
Right.
Well, those are all the questions I had for you. Is there anything else you'd like to add
that
you want to make sure people remember?
I think I've talked enough now, and there are many other things I could say, but the hour's getting late now, and I'm going to have to, it's about 6:30, I'm going to have to go get something to eat, you see. And I hope I've said something that will be helpful to you in your endeavor.
Yes, sir.
You see,
Very much. All
I've said, I know you have, you can pick out, I've not been altogether chronologically correct, but I have sought to deal with some aspects of the struggle and where we are at this juncture. I'm happy to have been one of the ministers that was invited by the FBI to come to the FBI headquarters to give us a better understanding of the FBI, because they won't, do not like this. And of course, when we got there, I never forget the agent, Rob Langford. We dialogued, and he wanted to know what we wanted to see the FBI do. And I jumped on him and said, reopen the bombing of the 16th Street Church. And all of the other ministers joined in, and when we got through with him, he said that he would see what he could do. And it was Rob Langford, which quietly worked and went to the Justice Department and wherever he needed to go to get it reopened. And as you know, to bring about the other convictions which took place, I was happy to be a part of that. Rob gave me credit for really harassing him and pushing him to reopen that case. And we were in a conference just a few days ago, and we had a award, a plaque, Martin King, I Have a Dream Award, which we presented to Rod Langford, who at one time was the head of the FBI in Birmingham. He's the only law officer that the Birmingham chapter SCLC has ever presented an award to. And of course, you know, Blanton was convicted. And then Cherry, the judge listened to various people and decided that he was not competent to stand trial. We didn't buy that. We demonstrated in front of the Criminal Justice Building every day except Sunday and Saturday and Sunday, until the judge finally changed his mind and sent him to the state mental institution to be evaluated. And once down there, it wasn't long before they determined that he was competent to stand trial.
Mm-hmm.
And so he did stand trial and was convicted. 9/11 had taken place, and it's really, when you look, paradoxical or something. Those little girls were killed in that dynamite blast on September the 15th, 1963. 9/11 happened on September the 11th. 4 days before the 15th. And so I often refer to Cherry as Osama bin Cherry. And said that if we're going to be concerned about catching Osama bin Laden, then we have to bring to the bar of justice our domestic terrorists.
Which he certainly was.
Which he certainly was, and we had many that mistreated blacks down through the years.
Mm-hmm.
So I was happy to be a part of that, you see, situation, because I imagine I could hear the voices of those little girls under the altar crying, "How long? How long?" And it was a long time coming. But I had great relief when they were brought to the bar of justice. And I remember Fred Chillers and I out in front of the Criminal Justice Building, we broke out into singing, "Glory, glory, hallelujah. His truth is marginal." All right.
Thank you very much.
All right, you're quite welcome.